Our first reading today is from Leviticus chapter 19, verses 1 to 2 and 9 to 18. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the entire assembly of Israel and say to them, 'Be holy, because I, the Lord your God, am holy.'" When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field, or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time, or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the alien. I am the Lord your God. Do not steal. Do not lie. Do not deceive one another. Do not swear falsely by my name, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Do not defraud your neighbor or rob him. Do not hold back the wages of a hired man overnight. Do not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind, but fear your God. I am the Lord. Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great, but judge your neighbor fairly. Do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers the neighbor's life. I am the Lord. Do not hate your brother in your heart. Rebuke your neighbor frankly, so you will not share in his guilt. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Our second reading is from Matthew, chapter 5, verses 38 to 48. You have heard that it is said, "Eye for an eye, and tooth for a tooth." But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him on the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You have heard that it is said, "Love your neighbor and hate your enemy." But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect.
I was taking a break during sermon preparation. I was taking a break to play Scrabble. Not with a board in front of me, but via Facebook and the internet with one of my friends who was somewhere else and who would probably take their turn at another time. I looked at my letters. A-H-A-G-N-I-T. It was that pesky second A that was a problem. If it had been an E, I could have put heating. Or an L, I could have put halting. Or even if it was a W or a B or an F, I would have had a seven-letter word to start with and be off to a great start. But there it was, an A. And that 50-point bonus wasn't going to be mine in this turn. So, putting the highest scoring letter on the double letter square, I started off with 26 points for hating. which felt a bit incongruous, given that I was trying to write a sermon about loving everyone, even enemies. And I did sort of ponder about the rightness of putting that word down. Now, playing Scrabble on the internet is different in some ways than playing Scrabble with someone face to face with a board between you. The game on the computer won't let me play unacceptable words. And in fact, it has a little facility to let you check to see if the words that you choose are valid words to play, that they're accepted. I must admit, though, it is considered bad form to use those programs that can automatically list all possible words from your letters, no matter how stuck you are. But there are those words that are acceptable according to the rules, but are described as taboo or offensive. And it always, if I do notice one of those words, I think, should I play a word that I would not use in conversation? After all, it's not really using the word, it's just the pattern of letters that I'm putting on the board. Well, I mean, if it's only going to get me 5 points, I'm not going to put it down, am I? But, gee, if it's going to be 55 and it's a really clever turn that will impress my opponent, well, I do have my boundaries, so I don't choose those words. But it's amazing how much a bigger score can make it seem that much more tempting. Working out how to act in a Scrabble game may not seem all that important, but the fact of who we are is inextricably linked with what we do, how we live, in all parts of our lives. And it involves making all sorts of decisions in all sorts of areas of our life. The process, the art or science of making decisions about how we should act, how we should live, is not always easy. I mean, some things are. They're obviously wrong. We're not going to see Margaret Cargill's handbag sitting quietly in there and go over and help ourselves to a few dollars out of it. We know that's wrong. We're not going to do that. But other things are a bit harder to work out. Other things have ethicists and some of the rest of us spending much more time and energy working things out. There are a number of different approaches to deciding what we should do. For some, utilitarianism, to use a big word, or the idea of consequences, weighing up the pros and cons of what gives the most benefit to the most people, even if it does mean that some suffer along the way, is what guides their decision. This is sometimes characterised as the ends justifying the means. Others take a more absolute approach. There are absolute rules, immutable rules, that can be and should be applied. It's always wrong to take a life. It's always wrong to lie, whatever the consequences. So does that mean if somebody comes and hides from someone seeking to do them harm in your home, comes and hides there and their pursuer comes and knocks on your door, is it wrong to tell a lie if they ask you if they're in your house? I don't think it's quite that clear. Others, though, see what is important is what forms us to be more virtuous people. Making decisions is about choosing what leads us into being the type of person that we see as complete, whole, fair and just. Now, sometimes we can have the idea that right and wrong in the Hebrew scriptures is about rules, about obeying commandments, about obeying hundreds of commandments. And this is sometimes contrasted with Jesus' teaching, which of course is about loving God and our neighbour. Certainly, as we read Matthew's Gospel and the others, it's apparent that love of God and love of neighbour are fundamental to Jesus' teaching and to his living. But it's also clear that Jesus values the teaching of the law. Jesus values those commandments in the scriptures. Over the last few weeks, our readings have covered Jesus' teachings in the Sermon on the Mount. Denise and David and Christine have led you in exploring these. And in these, Jesus certainly talks about the type of people we are to be. Blessed and a blessing. Salt and light. Jesus uses exaggeration and hyperbole. For example, plucking out your eye if it should lead you to do harm. And he offers specific examples of how we might live out our life. But Jesus doesn't throw out the law. He tries to teach people how it brings life, how it leads us deeper into relationship with God, closer into God's way of being. Now, our first reading was from Leviticus. Now, if you were to ask me which book of the Bible I would like to sit down and read, I must tell you that Leviticus would not rate highly on the list. Leviticus is a book that has a reputation for being dry, uninteresting, boring, an endless list of rules about food and clothes and sacrifice. Some of the rules were common sense. Some of them regulated hygiene and sanitation. Others were about helping, guiding people to live as God's people, people created in God's image. They were about showing people how to be holy as God is holy, how to reflect the divine nature, the divine vision for life, for wholeness of life, in the way they acted, in the way they related to one another. The people of God reflect the nature of God when they are guided by these commandments. And they cover many areas of life. There are some general rules, but there are also concrete examples. For example, the first one that Lachlan read to us was, don't reap to the edges of your field. Now, I don't know how many of you have been reaping recently. Not many of us have harvesting as part of our living. But in giving that specific example helps us to understand a more general principle. It says, don't search for and harvest every last bit of produce. And it's not just about charity. It's about recognising that there are more important goals in life than maximising returns to ourselves. Maximising profits is not what should shape our practice. We should always leave room for others to live and grow. I wonder in our era what corporate and business practices might be addressed by a list such as in our reading today. Don't strive so hard for a bargain that you prevent the other person from earning a decent living too. So let's imagine the world, the sort of world that might be described in Leviticus. It's a world where people don't hoard and grasp abundance, but share it with others. It's a world where people don't steal, and by that it means they don't take what is not theirs, whether that be possessions or reputations, a right to live with dignity or a right to justice. It's a world where employers don't exploit employees, where people's word can always be trusted, where the administration of justice is never diverted by the demands of special interests, but is always administered fairly and impartially. It's a world where the vulnerable and the stranger are not marginalised, but honoured and included, where people don't seek vengeance or bear grudges or take advantage of or pleasure in another's failings or misfortunes, but rather seek to help them. Imagine such a world. A world in which people love their neighbours as themselves. That's the kind of community life imagined in Leviticus, the kind of holy people envisioned in God's law. And it's the kind of people envisioned by Jesus as he teaches the people who follow him. Where there is any attempt to restrict the extent of the law, any attempt to literalise the commandments so as to allow one person to take advantage of another, Jesus makes it clear that love has no limits, that the character of God's people does not allow behaviour that hurts and diminishes anyone, whether it is specifically forbidden in the law or not. That the command to love goes beyond those we are happy to call our neighbours, even to those we see as our enemies. Sometimes today, we hear the cry of people who have been hurt by others. And we often hear that cry, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, as if this is divinely mandated instruction to seek revenge. It was never meant this way. It was meant as a limit to revenge. If you have to seek revenge, this much and no more. But Jesus says, even this much vengeance is too much. And loving your neighbour was never meant to suggest we should hate anyone who wasn't our neighbour, not even our enemies. Choosing to write people off is destructive, whether it be in our family or marriage, in our workplace or our community, in our country or beyond. Choosing to write people off is destructive for us as well as for them. If God's being is generous, if God tells us that we have value, then that is the character that we should grow within ourselves in every part of our lives, to be generous and to value others, to walk in love. Now, Jesus was not just talking abstractions about enemies as he spoke on the Mount that day. He was not even suggesting that we could love our enemies away. Jesus knew the people that he spoke to had enemies. They were all around, the occupying Roman forces, and those who collaborated with them were clearly enemies. Yet Jesus was saying, no vengeance, non-violence. Now, most translations have Jesus saying, do not resist an evildoer, which always seemed a bit strange to me when Jesus himself seemed to be resisting evil in all that he did and calls his followers to do the same. One scholar makes the case that the word that is used for resist has to do with violence. Elsewhere, it's used for warfare or armed resistance. Therefore, the sentence might be better translated as do not violently resist the evildoers. Especially as Jesus then moves on to some illustrative examples of how to resist evil non-violently. And it's a bit hard perhaps for us to understand. I wonder if you could come up here, Steve, please. It says, if somebody strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other one to them. Now, people in ancient times... Steve's getting a bit worried now. People in ancient times did not initiate action with the left hand, since the left hand was considered unclean. So if they're going to strike someone, it was with their right hand. Now, if I'm going to hit you, Steve, on the cheek, which I'm not, how am I going to have to do that?
With the back of your hand.
With the back of my hand, yes. So the only way to strike another person on the right cheek with your right hand is to give them a backhander. And that was an insult, an expression of dominance. In the first century, the people most likely to be backhanded were slaves, women, children, and people considered somehow lesser than their Roman overlords. Jesus doesn't counsel passivity in the face of an insult. Quite the contrary. Someone backhands you on the right cheek, lift your head back up, turn the other cheek, and expose the left one as well. You have dignity as a human being. Don't let someone else take that from you. Don't hang your head and accept civility. Stand there with your hand held high. Head held high. That way you are defining your own self and not letting someone else define you as lesser. This is how to resist evil non-violently. Turn the other cheek. Thank you, Steve. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Who is likely to make you go 1 mile? There is a clue in the unit of measurement that is used. Mile is not usually used. That is a Roman word. And it was a Roman regulation that said they could press anyone into service to make them carry the soldier's gear. But there was a limit to that. You could only make someone do that for 1 mile. So carrying the soldier's gear an additional mile is an assertion of independence and personal autonomy in a situation that is ordinarily dehumanising. Offering your cloak to someone who is suing you for your shirt is probably one of those situations of exaggeration, which leads us to a ridiculous picture. Giving someone your cloak as well as your shirt means you're going to end up naked in the courtroom. And that's a matter of shame for you, but also for your opponent who sees you. Well, perhaps this isn't meant to be taken literally any more than plucking out your eye, but it is to be taken seriously, meant to take you deeper into understanding how to love your enemy. And I don't think it's meant to say that turning the other cheek or going another mile is just a strategy aimed at shaming or converting your enemy. It's not a method that's intended to help you fly under the radar and avoid trouble. Such behaviour is not without risk. After all, it's the path of non-violent resistance that Jesus took, the path of loving enemies that he took all the way to the cross. But it is the way of the people of God, the way to perfection, which does not mean moral purity or lack of flaws, but is more to do with wholeness and maturity and integrity. A consistent life, a life consistent with what we know of God. Now, hating is a word that might get you 26 points to open in Scrabble, but it's not the way God's people live, even towards those who are persecuted and exploit, those who persecute and exploit you. It is not something that allows the nature of God to be seen in this world. It is not something that leads to life for those who are hated or those who hate. I think one of the best examples of this in our time is Nelson Mandela and what happened once he was after the fall of the apartheid regime in South Africa. His approach on his release from jail was not to harbour or promote revenge. It wasn't just to brush away the evil of the past. It was an evil that had to be faced. But he was adamant that the way forward was through forgiveness, not revenge. It was as if he was saying, "You took away my freedom. You took away those years of my life, my health, my rights. But you could not take away my ability to act as a decent person, to live as a loving person." Nelson Mandela chose a path of working for his for a future for his enemies as well as for his neighbours. There is a saying that an eye for an eye just leaves the whole world blind. Let us instead choose to live in a world where we can see the goodness of God, where we can see it in the world around us and also in our choices to love and to forgive and to live as God's holy people. Amen.